Current State on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. Many thanks for joining us. At the end of each month, we check in with Great Lakes commentator and journalist Gary Wilson for updates on environmental stories from around the basin. For today's Great Lakes Month in Review, we'll be talking about the dramatic rise in lake levels this fall, Great Lakes levels primarily, and we'll also hear about the latest policy updates on Asian carp and the UN's stance on the Detroit water shutoffs. Yes, the UN has weighed in on that. Gary Wilson, welcome back.
Good morning, Mark. And before we start, I just want to assure you that I come with no stake in hand to be driven into the ground.
Okay. That is good to know. In 2013, water levels in the Great Lakes reached record lows, impacting everybody from lakefront cottage owners to the shipping industry. Lake levels have rebounded. Now, instead of the usual decrease we see in the fall, the water continues to rise, at least on Lake Superior. What's going on here? What's behind this change in lake levels, Gary?
Mark, and I would just say that NPR's All Things Considered did a segment about this about a week ago, so you're on the people's radar, national radar, when NPR and All Things Considered are covering water in Michigan in the Great Lakes region. In that segment, a scientist from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He said the rise is caused by two things. One is increased precipitation, rain, snow, and also the lack of evaporation that usually occurs at this time of year. Late summer and then well into the fall are sort of the prime season for lake evaporation, which is most of the water disappears. And that lack of evaporation is what's puzzling scientists. They don't have an answer for it. So there are a couple of things going on there that he touched on.
Are we talking primarily the Great Lakes, or are we talking inland lakes as well?
Well, he didn't cover the inland lakes, and of the Great Lakes, he's referring mainly to Superior, Michigan, and Huron. The smaller lakes in the southern regions of the Great Lakes, Ontario and Erie, they're pretty much normal, and their normal evaporation is taking place. So We're just talking about the northern bigger lakes.
Is this part of the cycle? So this is an anomaly, though, that they have yet to figure out.
Yes, it is. That's correct.
Okay. Do experts see this trend of rising lake levels? Do they feel that this might continue?
Well, they're not ready to go there yet. The people I talk to at the International Joint Commission, that's the organization, the U.S.-Canadian organization that advises the two governments on all things water, they just continually reemphasize that, you know, lake levels go up and they come down. It's part of the natural process. Because they're up now in a period when they should be going down, they don't have an answer for that. They would tell you it's a complex system, and like all good scientists do, they say it requires more study. And I'm not necessarily always a fan of study, but this is such an important issue for the ecology and the economy of the region. I think they're right. There should be resources put into trying to figure out why these lake levels are behaving abnormally.
It will be very interesting to see where we stand a year from now. With another winter behind our belt, because, of course, last winter was so extraordinary. Let's move on to Asian carp here. Earlier this month, Gary, the Michigan Department of Natural Resources announced that they'd found Asian carp DNA in the Kalamazoo River. Follow-up tests did not find additional samples or live fish. But let's talk about the policy side of this issue. Has there been any development recently at a regional or national level to address a potential invasion of Asian carp?
You know, let me get to that in a second. I would just add, Mark, that there is also a recent discovery of the carp DNA in Green Bay in Wisconsin.
So, oh, true, yes.
Yeah, that's another warning sign that's popped up on the radar. To answer the question, and it'll be a brief answer, has there been any change at the policy level? And the answer is no. Not much is happening. Not much, if anything, is happening at the policy level. I did reach out to Tim Meador, the executive director of the Great Lakes Commission. They work for the governors. He's been very active, and the commission has been very active in trying to find a way to build some consensus around a next step on the CARP issue. And Eder told me that he and the mayor's group have formed an advisory group that consists of about 30 government agencies, environmental groups, industry groups, general stakeholders that are concerned about Asian carp. He did tell me that in August the group was able to reach agreement on sending a letter to members of the Great Lakes Congressional Delegation. Their request was for $8 million for the Army Corps of Engineers to do a study that could facilitate a reengineering of an area called the Brandon Lock in the Chicago area waterways system. The Brandon Lock is a key point where these experts feel like they have a chance to slow or even potentially stop Asian carp from traversing further up the waterways system. They sent the letter to Congress. I asked Eder if he had heard back from Congress to see what if they have any interest in that. He didn't respond to that request, so I'll take that as a no. But what this does, even if Congress was to take this on, all this is another study that would take 2 years, and you know, who knows what will happen with it. So there's not much happening on the policy level.
What does the discovery of DNA mean? I mean, is that interpreted in different ways by different people, or I mean, how do environmentalists feel about it, for example?
You're exactly on the mark. It's definitely interpreted differently by different people, depending on their agenda. Environmentalists they're frustrated. The environmental community has been pretty much locked into calling for physical separation of the Great Lakes from the Mississippi, but even now they realize that that's a non-starter in the near term, if not, you know, for the long term. I did have an exchange with the Natural Resources Defense Council here in Chicago. They've been pretty much on the point lobbying for physical separation, and like I said, they're frustrated. They see no consensus or no sense of urgency in the region. The executive director there, Henry Henderson, did indicate that post-election, they're, you know, cautiously optimistic that they'll see in legislators and politicians engage on the issue, but the short answer is they're frustrated.
Is it going to take the discovery of a live fish to really move this thing forward? I mean, if we continue to discover DNA, for example, in other locations, what do you think the impact of that is going to be, short of discovering an actual live Asian carp?
I don't think that continuing findings of DNA is going to prompt anybody to do anything any quicker. We've been finding DNA hits for 3 or 4 years now, and including in Lake Erie, and there have even been live fish found in Lake Erie. Now, it was impossible to determine how they had been there. It doesn't appear to be that there's a breeding population there. But I think the only thing that's going to move the dial on this is findings of substantial numbers of live fish somewhere in the Great Lakes.
Gary Wilson is our guest. He's a Great Lakes journalist and commentator. It is our Great Lakes Month in Review segment here on Current State on WKAR. The UN released a statement last week saying that the water shutoffs in Detroit from the summer violate human rights. What was behind that statement?
Sure, Mark. And this is an important topic because it's gotten, as you and I have discussed in the past, it's gotten national and international exposure and attention. In 2011, the United Nations passed a resolution declaring that there is a human right to drinking water and sanitation. It passed the UN by a vote of 122-0, with a number of countries, including the U.S., abstaining. So based on what's been happening in Detroit with the water shutoffs, the UN sent what they call rapporteurs, reporters, investigators, would be the loose translation, to come to Detroit to see what was happening and report back. They did that. They met with community members, citizens, agency people. And they released their report, and it was highly critical of Detroit's action and with the water shutoffs. And they made a couple of strong recommendations, one of which was for Detroit to provide access to at least 100 liters of water per person per day. That's generally what is thought to be what people need, what each individual needs for drinking and for basic sanitation. And they also called for a federal investigation to determine if the shutoffs are having a disproportionate impact on African Americans. So they're heavily engaged on this.
What will the impact of the UN report likely be? I mean, does the UN actually have the authority to do anything about this? Or could their report force some kind of action, in your view?
No, I don't think the report can force any action. You know, the United Nations and their member states vote on things routinely and then, you know, pretty much routinely ignore them if it doesn't meet their purposes. The control of the water is at the local level here. The provider, which is the Detroit Water and Sewerage District, has the responsibility to sell the water to people, and the people have a responsibility to pay. That's how it works here. But what the UN does have is the gravitas of their being a worldwide organization. They are the United Nations, and they've got the bully pulpit. They elected to come to Detroit and to investigate, and their report here, whether you agree with it or not, is you know, just another piece of bad publicity for Detroit and Michigan on the world stage. When the water shutoffs took place in Detroit, people around the world were, and I'm talking even people in Canada, not just in Europe or Asia, they were kind of shocked and appalled that this would happen in, you know, a highly developed, industrialized nation and city. And they weren't necessarily aware of all the things that were going on in Detroit. So Detroit needs to get in front of this somehow.
Gary Wilson is a Great Lakes commentator and journalist. Gary, thanks for your time.
It's always good to be with you, Mark. Thank you.
This segment is supported by Michigan State University's Knight Center for Environmental Journalism. More news about the Great Lakes environment can be found at greatlakesecho.org and on Current State every Tuesday as part of our partnership.